Welcome to a special episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast. Today, we're going to be looking back at looking forward and reviewing some of the predictions made by guests on the show throughout the last year. In 2025, we asked all our guests the same question. Do you have any predictions for the future of cybersecurity? They shared predictions about attackers, defenders, AI, compliance, and the direction of cybersecurity as a whole. This episode isn't about deciding who was right or wrong, because in many cases, it's still too early to know. Instead, we're looking at the predictions themselves. Where did they cluster? What assumptions kept surfacing? And what do those patterns tell us about how the industry was thinking as 2025 came to a close? This is a review of the predictions made throughout the year, without verdicts, without hindsight bias, and with an eye towards what's still unresolved as we head into 2026. Let's get into it. One of the most common predictions we heard in 2025 was that attackers would continue shifting away from purely technical exploits and lean more heavily into people. Guests predicted more social engineering, more insider risk, and more targeted use of personal data pulled from social platforms and breach data. Many also predicted that AI would allow attackers to scale reconnaissance and targeting far more efficiently. Whether those predictions fully materialize or not remains to be seen, but the assumption underneath them was clear. Attackers will keep looking for the path of least resistance, and humans remain that path.
Man, I'm never good at this one because all of my predictions never come true. So I will say yes, and I think that I still think that one of the big things that's going to become more and more prevalent is insiders assisting attackers through things like getting finding like insiders at telcos to pay off to get people's phone numbers to do things, you know, like just SIM swap them or something to that effect, or maybe just disgruntled employees. They don't like their job. Attacker says, "Hey, do you hate your job? I'll give you $50 if you give me your password." And then they do it. I think there's going to be more and more an increase of that. And I think that's something to look out for.
Yes. I just wrote my second article for Hacking Magazine. That's like hacking spelled with a 9 instead of a G. And I titled it 2025, the year your organization might just get hacked by black hat agents. And so my prediction is I'm very clever, nefarious black hat hackers. Their approach to things are above and beyond that of most blue team professionals or, you know, CISSPs or anybody working at that level, right? And a simple example is like the OWASP Top 10 for LLMs. So I'm doing a research project this year with some pretty heavy hitters from different organizations. And the whole notion of this research paper is looking at the NIST AI RMF, that's the risk framework, and then looking at the OWASP Top 10 that's current, and then trying to find things that are outside of that top 10 that would be like a zero-day attack that organizations are looking for. Because if you're an organization, you're like, where do I go for AI security or safety? And you're going to go to those two organizations probably first and foremost, right? Yeah. You're going to say, what do we know about this machine learning team? They're going to be like, I got to like talk about this. Okay, NIST, bam, go to NIST, bam, go to OWASP. And they're going to find that. But someone who thinks like me is going to come up with new attacks and novel threats that haven't even been seen before. So that's one example. And in the case of AI agents and orchestrations, what they would call an AI workflow. If you could imagine someone who's AI savvy building an entire swarm, like a hive mind with like, you know, worker agents and soldier agents and all that stuff with specific roles. Imagine if you had like, you could draft like the dream team, right? Like the basketball team where you have like all the best players and you're like, yeah. Okay, I want the best possible social engineer for this. I want the best possible whatever, you know, payload expert. I want the best possible, you know, purple teamer. And then you're building this small organization with the sole purpose of getting into a specific organization. You have like OSIN. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And then it's fully automated where it's going to go through it. And at the end of the day, it's going to report back to a human being that has their own nefarious agenda. I mean, I think that that's probably where you're going to see more of that. You're going to see more of the same in a lot of sense, but you're going to see new emerging threats that the likes of which no one has seen before, because even AI agents themselves is like, it's the buzzword right now for 2025. So you can only anticipate, like I said, people leveraging that, like people, hackers will, like bad hackers will always leverage the same tech because they also have their thumb on the pulse of what's going on. And if you're not prepared for what you can't see, then truly you're not looking in the right direction.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was thinking, oh, you could get those bots to like spawn camp on the CVE reports as soon as something new comes out, just start flooding the network facing devices with it, right?
Yeah. So any organization that's like been penny pinching, and especially like IT security, cybersecurity, AI security, like now is not the time to play, because there's just things are moving so quickly that you really have to reassess, like, how valuable is your data? How valuable is your, personnel? How valuable is what you're selling? And then you might have to reallocate some funds. That would be my advice.
That's a fascinating question. There are lots of people out there that are smarter than me that would probably provide you with a better answer. The future of cybersecurity, from my perspective, is there's always going to be good guys. There's always going to be bad guys. There's always going to be a new methodology that gets rolled out. And, you know, there was a time that people used to say, oh, there's only 7 ways that people can, you know, get in. There's only, you know, 7 methodologies that people can use. But the reality is that with the onset of AI becoming so much more prevalent, and now we've got competing forces that have the combined compute power that goes well beyond our capacity, that the fight may be just beginning. And the mission, whether it's about compliance or not, is to say, how am I going to make sure that I'm most protected? But I don't see that necessarily getting any easier over time. I do see, and I'll go back to my Palo Alto Networks days, I do think that there is always the opportunity to take a look at how am I deploying the posture that I'm deploying, and how do I make things so well connected that I understand the information that I'm receiving so that I can react to it appropriately and so that I can proactively keep myself from being harmed in this process. But the bad guys are always going to be there. There's a reason that they're there. There's money in this for them. At the end of the day, it's usually about money, not just malicious intent. Although it's malicious intent is behind that too. As long as there's a way for people to earn money by being a bad guy, there's going to be bad guys. And it's going to be one of those battles that may never end. Maybe we'll get to a point where, AI is so good that somehow it figures out that bad people are bad. But I don't know. Now we're probably talking about, the Terminator and, that world. what do you think? I would like to hear your opinion about that. What do you see in the future?
On the AI front, I definitely think we're moving towards a world, and I reference William Gibson all the time because he had such a clear vision of the future so long ago. I do think that we end up with bots battling bots on the internet. I just read an article the other day where we just passed 51% of all internet traffic is now bots. And out of that, 37% was classified as malicious. So, yeah.
That's a crazy number. There was some movie I watched. I wish I could remember which one it was, but it was basically like a war got fought and nobody ever even entered the battlefield. Like it got fought basically online. And to your point, there's going to be more and more of that. Trick is, how do we stop it? So let's make sure we're the good guys.
I think we have reached a plateau in terms of attacks at the moment. That's my perception. And everyone expects that would be like this and build everything based on what we know already. I have a particular opinionated view on what the generative AI is doing in the world of good and bad. I'm looking at this technology as being probably the best technology for the bad that could appear in the world, because they only have to hit once.
Yeah.
While on the defender side, we are still behind and we kind of forgot about some principles and we jumped immediately into this, which it's exactly the opposite of the objective of not missing one.
Yeah.
So I'm, of course, opinionated around it. I'm trying to predict myself how things will evolve. But I think complexity of the attacks, as well as the volume, the diversity, is going to be probably rising up. The need for data, the need for fast response, that would be probably the most advantage, reacting in seconds. Automation will have to be built into the ecosystem,
Another recurring prediction in 2025 was that compliance would move from a periodic exercise to something more continuous. Guests talked about SOC 2, ISO, PCI, and emerging AI governance frameworks becoming tighter, more operational, and harder to treat as paperwork. The prediction wasn't that compliance would magically improve security, but that it would increasingly dictate how security programs are structured and funded. As we move into 2026, it's still unclear how effective the shift will be, but the expectation that compliance pressure will increase was nearly universal.
Oh, yes. I think this concept that Vant has made, continuous control monitoring, is gonna continue to be a thing. And broadly, beyond just controls like we think about them today. When you look at things like you've got two-factor enabled, you've got RBAC set up, it's interesting, right? It's important. It's critical we take track of these. But I really think we're going to be in a world where we continue to see these just expand outwards, where you truly can actually have a sense of what compliance is holistically across the board. What that looks like, I have no idea. But the idea that companies are this living thing where compliance isn't just a point-in-time process, but actually something that evolves over time, I really think is where the world is heading. We see this right now with some of the things we're trying to do, where we can tie your policies closer to your actual infrastructure. But in a world where increasingly trust is so critical and you have to interchange with hundreds, if not thousands, of different counterparties every day, I think really we're going to see a world where compliance, security, these things are at the forefront. And truly how we track them, how we sort of identify what's going on, you know, either within a company we do business with or with our own data even, I think that's where the future is headed. What it looks like, no idea. But the idea of a future that is continuously verified, continuously trusted, and continuously compliant, I think is where we're going to be.
Boy, that's a loaded question right there, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the main drivers we're going to be seeing in the next decade or so, and I know, you know, people always, you know, have that saying that, you know, compliance isn't security or whatnot, but man, compliance is a massive driver of security. Like, majority of my budget's driven by compliance issues and controls, which are security controls, right? But without the compliance in place, you can't sell your widgets to your customers, right? If you don't have your SOC 2, your ISO, whatever it is, your PCI, you're not selling your widgets. You don't have a company. And most companies start out from a security from that point of view. You're a business enabler. And as you continue to scale, like, you have more and more compliance regulations around the world you have to satisfy now, especially in Europe. I mean, they drive compliance over there. We're you know, kind of follow them. I can see compliance becoming just a massive driver in the future, especially around AI. Like, ISO already has their 42001 that came out in March around kind of the AI SM, and similar to how the 27001s for ITSM, and you know, how you secure your AI pipelines. Are you doing all the things correctly? And if you're using AI in your products, which everybody wants to, right? Like, we're getting requests from our customers now. Where's your ISO 42001? Oh, crap. And that's going to drive a whole bunch of internal changes, from policies to tools to controls that, I mean, I wouldn't have put it in place unless I was driven by this.
Right.
And because this new regulation is coming along and our customers are asking for it, I will be funded to do it. I'll be able to put these extra security controls in place.
Yeah.
Again, is compliance equal to security? No. Is compliance driving security? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just see this getting more and more and more, especially as we become more globalized. You know, most of our, you know, while, you know, some of the countries are looking more inward, the companies are not. Like, you look at most of the SaaS companies in the world, and they are global. Like, Atlassian, like, when I was there, it's an Australian company.
Yeah.
Operating in the United States with customers all around the world, Salesforce, all around the world. You know, the same thing with Google, all around the world. They're looking at the global market, and they have to take into global perspectives. Everything from, you know, Finland's, you know, draconian data protection laws to Brazil having data residency within their country's borders, right? Which makes no sense because you're in the digital age, but that's their rules. That's their laws, right? To some of the controls in Australia, where you have to have, you know, pen tests from a Crest certified, you know, pen tester. You have to cater to all of these countries' rules and regulations. And at the end of the day, that's such a massive ask Like, there's no room left for the cool extra security things you want to do, because your entire budget's eaten up by doing what you have to do just to do business.
Yeah.
And while it's, you know, again, it's not sexy, it's not fun, it's not exciting, maybe not what people want to hear. Like, I just see that as becoming the reality. Again, when I was at Atlassian, Salesforce, I mean, 89% of our budget was driven by the things we must do to do business. You know, we had, you know, maybe 10, 15% of the stuff that was extra fun, things you wanted to do, you know, science projects, whatever. And here at Illumio, it's very similar, where the vast majority of my budget is driven by what must we do to enable the business to continue selling our products. I do have a little bit of leeway to add some extra things, you know, some extra risks that aren't tied to anything. But as the compliance frameworks continue to grow, they're starting to encompass a lot of the things that we're missing.
Yeah.
And they're putting those mandatory controls in place, and they come and check them every year. So it's not like they're optional.
Yeah.
So I just see the GRC side of security becoming a much bigger part of the overall security ecosystem, and playing a much more kind of ingrained role in both, you know, the other pillars of kind of security operations, the operational side of things, and your product type security initiatives, all the way through enterprise and kind of corporate security as well. Mm-hmm. It's going to be driving all of it.
Looking inward, many guests predicted that the cybersecurity industry itself was headed for a period of consolidation. Too many vendors, too many overlapping tools, and too much complexity for already stretched teams. The prediction was that CISOs would push back, rationalizing stacks, cutting vendors, and demanding clearer outcomes. At the same time, guests predicted that geopolitical instability will continue to elevate cybersecurity as a strategic concern. Whether consolidation actually delivers better security is still an open question, but the expectation of change was widespread.
Predictions for the future of cybersecurity. I mean, I've been saying this for years now around consolidation, but I've been saying without having evidence of it, but I met with more CISOs in the last week that are trying to go from 150, 200 vendors to 50 or 60 vendors, and hiring people that are dedicated people on their teams to really just look at their security stack and say, like, what are we using all this stuff for? Right. Like, people with, like, that's like a new role.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we using everything to its full capacity? Do we need this tool? Like, all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Some people that are like, where I've talked to a CISO, they're like, hey, don't talk to me. Talk to this other guy who's like evaluating the stack right now. I get it because, you know, I think there's a lot of orphaned security companies in there. Then there's a lot of duplication of effort and stuff like that. So there's going to be a lot of, consolidation, here in the near term. There's some like companies that, you know, kind of get long in the tooth that have to figure out what their next move is going to be.
Right.
So that's a prediction about like the business side of things. It'd be too easy to say like AI is going to solve all the problems here. but I think we're going to see like some like serious global, geopolitical moves that involve cyber on like a threat side of things that are going to put the importance of cybersecurity on an even higher pedestal in the next 12 months or something like that.
Predictions. Yeah. Buckle up. It's not for the weak of heart. It's definitely a lifestyle choice. And I want to phrase it like this. We kind of started this conversation on building culture, right? And part of building culture is having clear core values. And your core values, if you have created them effectively, any question that's posed to your business, you can look at your core values and it's going to help you find the answer, right? The answer just has a magical spiritual way of becoming apparent. I think if you're in this industry and you're not clear on your core values and your why, that's scary, because the amount of fortitude that's going to be required to do the right thing and really drive forward in what is certainly a storm of opportunity and chaos and potential pitfall. Yeah. It's going to be fun though.
The future of cybersecurity is local. I think that historically in the United States, it's been something so inextricable with the way that we deal with national security issues, that it's you know, it's epicentered in DC. It's something that only people who have a contact in the National Security Council can really work on. And I think we're seeing that technology is mainstream enough that it's everybody's problem now, but the solutions haven't scaled to everybody the same way that technology has. So I really believe in these types of programs like cybersecurity clinics, like the Civilian Cyber Corps, that are really local, that are just creating trust networks between the Small Business Association and county officials and the state government. That is really where we're seeing profound impact. We see, you know, the San Diego Cyber Clinic working with their local water treatment plant. Those are the types of collaborations that really outlast administrations. And so I think to the extent that we can build in that local and regional infrastructure, we as a nation will become a lot more resilient to the new way that cybersecurity is starting to impact our infrastructure, right? They're not going after just the federal government. Everybody is at risk. And so we need solutions that are regionally accessible to almost everybody in the country.
Whoa! That's that's a big question. Do you know what? I would, one question I've always, whenever I've done an interview and I've been asked, like, where do you see this in 5 years and so forth, or where do you see yourself in 5 years? I've always said I've never wanted to look further than a year. The reason for that is because if I look too far forward and put myself on a trajectory, it's harder to pivot. Now, does that mean that we don't need to be prepared? No, I do think that there's a lot to prepare for, and we've gone through a huge amount of meat in this podcast, which are things which do need to be prepared for. Cybersecurity, I think, is going to very soon be a even bigger part of people's daily lives than they even see it now. I think there's a lot of people that still see it as something which is only hits big businesses, hits governments, hits this, hits that. We saw in Spain not that long ago where everything came to a close for, I think it was around 30 minutes. It obviously might not have been a cyber attack. I don't think it was, but that is a reality of what can happen if a cyber attack hit a country. There's a very, very good series on Netflix. I think it's called Zero Day, which shows 1 minute when a cyber attack can stop everything in a country and the impact 1 minute can make. And I think people still see it as that Netflix series, that big TV, storyline, the front of the newspapers, things that don't affect them directly in their everyday life. We see text scams, we see phone scams, all of that type of stuff. But it's not exactly, it doesn't spring to mind when it comes to the huge impact that cyber issues can have. And I think that that's going to be something which drastically evolves, especially with AI coming into the picture. AI is a huge force for good when used correctly, but we do need to make sure we are leveraging it and using it correctly as an industry to be able to also counteract how it could be used for very, very bad things. And I think cyber is going to become more of an impact on people's daily lives, not just something which is secluded within our industry and secluded within those bigger organizations. Do I know where that's going, when that's going to come, or what's going to evolve it? No. Do I think necessarily that that's a bad thing? No, because I think we also need to be so completely open to pivoting at the moment, because we've pivoted so much, so quickly already. I think there's going to be another big pivot and another big pivot. And that's what's going to be very, very interesting over the next year, because it's speeding up. It's very, very much speeding up.
Yeah, so, the rate of change is accelerating, which is terrifying.
And it's, it'll be nice to have a full night's sleep at some point. So whenever someone discovers an AI element to stop all cyber attacks, let me know, please.
So there's a prediction I've been saying for the last couple of years, and I think it still holds true, and it's because we're still on an upward swing. I think there's increased emphasis on post-breach resilience, and that's only going to continue. For the longest time, whether it's the companies, the you know, who are the end users or customers of these technologies, the vendors themselves, or even the venture capitalists who finance them. So much of the emphasis was on prevention, making sure no one got in the first place. We used to actually see this come up even from CIOs. You would have a CISO who wanted to adopt a technology like ours because they knew they needed out-of-band communications for an incident, and they didn't want to be turning to a consumer application that might leave them, you know, in on the wrong side of their own general counsel internally, even for not having met the appropriate controls. They would go to the CIO and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And oftentimes budget would be denied, or and they would be simply told, look, if you were doing your jobs right in the first place, you wouldn't need a tool like this. So either go do your jobs better and or figure out how to better protect the day-to-day tools we already have. And I think now what we're increasingly seeing is that CIO, who was once a blocker, is increasingly turning into an ally because they themselves are aware that the probability of an incident arising where you're going to need some sort of secure out-of-band communications is now a probability of one. And as a result, they themselves are saying, hey, we need to have better post-breach resilience. And so I think you're going to start to see more invested time and energy on behalf of customers, but also then the vendors and also the VCs who finance them.
Hey, it's Nicole from the Lima Charlie marketing team. Many security teams deal with tool sprawl, dozens of different solutions that create gaps in visibility and slow down response times. Our SecOps Cloud platform consolidates your security stack into a unified platform where everything works together. Lima Charlie gives you comprehensive endpoint visibility and automated response capabilities in milliseconds instead of minutes, so you can stop threats before they spread across your environment. Try our scalable infrastructure for your security services for free at limacharlie.io.
Predictions about MSSPs were remarkably consistent throughout 2025. Guests predicted that talent shortages and operational fatigue would make fully in-house security programs increasingly difficult to sustain. The expectation was that MSSPs would take on more execution while internal teams shift towards oversight, risk, and decision-making. But this prediction came with uncertainty. Would MSSPs be able to prove value through outcomes and metrics, or would they simply become another layer of abstraction? That question remains unanswered as we head into 2026.
Oh, boy.
Everybody always loves this one.
I know. I think MSSPs are going to play a much larger role in cybersecurity going forward. Obviously, I hope so, because I'm at MSSP Alert, so that would be great for us. But I really do think, you know, everybody always says, as the cybersecurity landscape evolves, and it really is constantly evolving and it's constantly changing. And like we talked about at the beginning, between the skills gap and the constant evolution of threats, it's so much. But MSSPs have specialized knowledge, they have specialized resources, and they are uniquely equipped to go out and tackle these threats. And I think there's a really huge opportunity for MSSPs going forward to go out and really change, level the playing field in cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Big and weird.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think the topics you brought up earlier, such as like staff turnover and all the complexity in keeping a security operation running, it's generally just too much for even a large organization to bring in internally. So, you know, contracting it out to services that specialize in that, I think is definitely something that we're going to see grow.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. Consolidation, off from the enterprise. I just really do. I mean, I believe in the MSP model. I changed my product. I believe in it so much.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe that the knowledge, expertise, and time to keep an enterprise safe is overwhelming most organizations. We need the shared intelligence of the MSP. I don't think that's a real bold prediction, but that's my underlying prediction and why I literally changed my product around about 14 months ago.
Okay? Yeah, and I think we've seen that a lot actually in practice, where some enterprises have tried to bring security in-house, and then 2-3 years later, they're contracting it out to MSSPs because, like you were saying, retaining talent, building expertise, designing all of that in-house, it's a lot.
There's so much benefit of someone who does it at different companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone who keeps doing identity management for, you know, 5, 10, 20 companies, he's got so much learned experience and so much stuff that it's great. I mean, because we all know what happens to our brains. If you keep doing something the same way, you know, you don't grow, right? But if you're seeing this, oh, this is what you're seeing. Hey, we did this with this group. Oh, we used unit tests here and this way. And then we redid it here and here, and we got the right results, and we cleaned out the things. That's what I see. I do see more and more moving off from the enterprise. And what I believe is what you're going to have is the jobs at the enterprises will be governance people. Not so much IT people, but governance. Are the practices and procedure, you know, the enterprise has built a policy. Someone in the damn company's got to make sure that those policies are being followed,
yeah,
right? And yeah, that is the job that they will ever retain at the company. That those practices, we need to have these guidelines, and that person then says, okay, well, if I'm going to meet these objectives, I have to have these controls executed by these parties that will agree to these terms, right?
And find the MSSP to execute it, make sure they're keeping their end of the contract, all that stuff.
150%. So yeah. So the MSPs are going to have to not only mature in governance, but it mature in, oh God, man, how did I almost miss this? This is what I really believe. Metrics.
Right.
Our industry has to do a better job in metrics. I'm putting all these metrics into my product. Okay. I talked about things like my identity trust score. Well, shouldn't there be a metric that say, what is my overall identity trust score, right? And then your KPIs, what's my key performance indicator? How many of these reviews have I done? What percentage is my company right now in 30, 90, 100 days? What about key risk indicators? What about my key group, the Azure group, the Amazon group? What's my risk there? There's a great post that's going around by a guy named Zach something that quit Netflix and told that he hated his job because management kept asking him for security metrics. And he said, where the F am I going to get security metrics? Right? So I even wrote some patents on it about metrics for governance.
Yeah.
And you see where I go with that? That's what I'm giving you, the MSP. I'll give you metrics for that you are doing your job, because I believe in the MSPs. They're all good. They're all doing their job. Let me give you a little green ball, you know, that says, you know, I am doing my job. Then you can show the governance person at the company that says, oh, you know, Bob's MSP is great. You know, we started, we were in the yellow and reds. Now we're in the greens. And everybody
loves a dashboard, right?
I totally believe, like Cynthia Stammert down the world, it's not enough to do your job. You got to show evidence that you're doing the job.
If you were to go by what I'm getting like the most calls for these days, as you know, figuring out how there's going to be a lot of sort of AI augmentation in the SOCs. I hate doing that. I hate how every conversation these days is an obligatory conversation about that. But I do think it's true. It comes from two directions, right? We've gotten tons of vendors reaching out to us about their AI, you know, whatever, that's going to help us be massively more efficient or better at detecting threats or blah, 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 blah. But we've also got clients who are asking us like, well, how are you using AI to make your services better? And it's like, well, like, what do you want us to do? Like, we've got real intelligence and not artificial intelligence. So yeah, we can talk about that a little bit, but I do think I think that there's going to be a lot of, really bad implementations of AI that are going to, you know, cause undesirable results for MSSPs and their customers. And within all that noise, there's going to be some like really innovative and interesting things that show up that are going to help help folks work more efficiently. And I think, you know, finding those tools that become more of a force enabler and something that's going to help people work more efficiently and better is going to be the direction things are going is finding finding these tools and not like leaning too hard into them, but being open to, you know, what's out there and finding ways to leverage these technologies. Because I think that the MSSP space is going to continue to grow as more and more businesses understand that they need services like this. It used to be MDRs were for very large organizations who didn't want to have an internal SOC. And now it's kind of folding back to every organization needs to have somebody watching. So the opportunity sets there is growing, and there's not going to be, enough highly qualified people to do this job for every organization in the world who needs it. So it's going to require, innovation and scaling. And I think that'll be part of it, but there's going to be some misses along the way.
Yeah. And I think, those larger organizations too, a lot of them are learning that it's really hard to maintain an internal SOC, and they're also going back towards the MSSP model.
Yeah. Yep. They are. And I would say another thing that I would like to see, I don't know that I would predict that it's going to happen, but I think it's going to have to happen, is more and more tools out there exposing logs to be able to be consumed by MSSPs, and MSSPs are going to have to find ways to expand what they're able to capably monitor. When we got started, it was acceptable and pretty common to be a managed EDR play, basically, right? You could focus on that because that's where the ransomware attacks were happening, and that's where the work was. And that's expanding so much, especially since COVID, where so much happens in SaaS. That's where business happens nowadays. So I think that the MSSPs have to get really comfortable sort of expanding their skill sets and their capabilities to not only like bring in different data types, but also understand and work on them.
Just always more automation and tool consolidation, I imagine. Every single time I talk to an MSP or MSSP, they're using like 500 pieces of software to try and accomplish the same thing. So that, hopefully, that's the future.
Single pane of glass, I believe, is what it's been termed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that thing.
That thing.
So what's interesting to me, I want to see how the AI, the really bullish AI ventures sort of pan out, where they're claiming to, automate the analyst, automate security operations to the point potentially where what would be MSSP customers think that they don't need an MSSP, they just need this AI agent. To me, it seems a little bit silver bullet. I think maybe those tools are going to be useful for an MSSP to put next to a SOC and go side saddle, right? I'm going to be interested in seeing how MSSPs are going to compete against more AI native services that may or may not be calling themselves MSSPs. It's either going to be something that MSSPs need to adapt or evolve or get kicked out if that winds up working. But I'm really curious how that is going to pan out. We've got some really interesting use cases that we're using and we're building on the AI side that I'm really excited about. But again, what does it look like if Microsoft releases security agent, analyst, and you just build it in your Defender license and that's your security analyst and you call that your MSSP? I don't know.
Yeah, I think we all snickered at AI for a long time because marketing kind of jumped the gun in plastering AI on everything for years, and we never saw any results. But the pace of change now, I think a lot of people are really understanding that this is going to play a big role. I'm not sure what it's going to look like, but it's not going anywhere, and it's getting better at a pace that I've never seen a technology advance before.
Yeah, what we say here is, and what we've asked everybody is, what would your job look like if you had 4 interns, right? So you can trust the AI stuff about as far as you could trust your unsleeping, sleep-deprived, over-eager, sometimes too eager intern. What would your role look like? And breaking those down, we have some really fun use cases that have made a difference. That's
That's a great exercise. I'm going to actually take that away after this conversation and spend a minute thinking about what I would do with some interns.
Yep.
It's definitely going to be AI. AI is going to be in there. And then I think people are tired of point products. So, you know, clobbering together a bunch of point products doesn't work for, especially for medium and small businesses. We will see the need for all-in-one solution or fully integrated and supported by one company as the path forward for a lot of these verticals. And I do see that some of these MSSPs, which we're already starting to see, are going to have a global presence. They don't, you know, there's nothing holding anyone back now to a brick and mortar model, in my opinion. And that's okay. Again, in my opinion, you can have offices around the globe. So if you're successful in one country, most MSSPs are now starting to embark on other countries and seeing positive results with the same go-to-market strategy or technology strategy that they did in their original country, now in new marketplaces. And that's exciting to watch as well, because we have a handful of those that are now in our channel program that started in one country and are expanding into others and growing globally with their teams.
No, that's exciting. It's kind of like the Facebook model when they started. They were at one university and then they started going into the next university and next university. Yeah. And next thing you know, they've, well, we all know where it is today.
We're all in out. Yeah.
AI was the most frequently predicted and most cautiously discussed topic of 2025. Guests predicted increased use of AI on both sides. Attackers using it to automate and scale, defenders using it to triage and respond faster. At the same time, many warned that poor AI implementations could introduce new risk rather than reduce it. The prevailing prediction wasn't that AI would replace defenders, but that it would reshape how security work gets done. How much of that reshaping happens in 2026, and in what direction, is still very much an open question.
Yes, it will involve heavily AI on both the good and bad side. So no matter what side it's going to happen, AI is going to take over for sure.
Yes, AI, I know it's a commonplace nowadays to say that AI will be everywhere, but AI will play a major role in the next 12 months. And we will see the rise of MOAs, multimodal offensive AI. So industry need to get ready, need to be aware of that, and need to prepare, to brace, and to anticipate. And this is always what you do. The best investment you have in cybersecurity is anticipation. So let's anticipate altogether what's coming, because we know it's coming.
I am going to focus on the area of cybersecurity where I work, which is in cybersecurity marketing. There has been such a prevalence of AI-generated content in our ever-evolving digital world. It is everywhere, and I feel like the things that you can do that show that you are a human, a bumpy, rough around the edges, imperfect human, I think those are the things that are going to help you stand out, because so much of our content, so much of our visuals are starting to just feel like milquetoast. It's starting to feel like the same as everything else. And so being able to express your genuine voice as a founder, as a business, is going to be even more important than ever, because in this sea of sameness, even if you have some typos or grammatical errors, something that shows like, this is me, I am a human, this is my passion, this is my voice, is really going to help you to stand out.
Yeah,
so that's kind of what I predict, is that all of that sameness is going to become an annoyance, and we're going to be seeking out, our human eyes are going to be seeking out the things that we can tell are more human. And hopefully AI doesn't get to the point where it can even mimic that, because if so, we're all screwed.
Yes, as you were saying that, my brain automatically went, okay, I can see all these people changing their prompts to include like grammar
right,
mistakes.
A little typo. Oh, I'm sure that's probably already That's probably already happened. But I feel like we can kind of sniff those out for the most part. Like, I don't know.
The uncanny valley still exists.
Yes.
I don't know if it will forever, but I think we still have it.
It definitely does for now.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Oh, man. I'm not going to read the news today. I'm not going
to
read the news
today. Don't do it, Chris. Don't.
Yes, I do, actually. You know, I think we get very caught up in the idea that AI is going to replace us all and it's going to do everything for us and it's going to be all singing, all dancing. But I don't particularly see that as true. I think that, you know, we are probably going to move more, like, let's say, and I've used this example in the past, but let's say like SOC level analysis. While we're doing a lot of that alert triage today, you know, we also have a lot of alert fatigue. We also have a lot, like, more data than we can sift through, which is why AI is really important in these areas, as it was with us in endpoint protection and is in network detection and all these different subdisciplines of cybersecurity. But I think the ultimate thing that I'm saying is we are going to shift into more of like there will be a data labeling and data curation aspect where we will start to, you know, maybe the people who are worried about replacement will begin to shift more into this data labeling effort where they say, hey, no, this is actually bad. The model gets trained to do that. The model then takes over that aspect. And then we go back to this, the loop starts again. It frees up the SOC analyst to actually look at interesting behaviors. It means that the AI is smarter and trained on newer threats that it hasn't seen before. And I think that feedback cycle is going to begin to improve our cybersecurity hygiene and lead the way towards like what we conceptualize as autonomous cyber defense agents. And I think, that's a whole other conversation. I do think we will get there one day. And like, you know, time to react comes to mind. If we have, you know, I know a number of companies in the offensive AI space today that are looking at, you know, creating autonomous pen testers and autonomous offensive security agents.
Mm-hmm.
So if they are able to deploy these things at scale, you know, which don't need to eat, sleep, drink, whatever, and target every endpoint and everything that they can at one time, then we're going to have defensive agents that can do the same. So that is, you know, sorry for shoehorning a second prediction in, but I think, you know, time to respond is going to be important there, as well as that like secondary feedback cycle. And the world is going to look pretty different in 10 years. I mean, that's a safe bet anyway. Maybe I should shorten my time frame. But no, great question, Chris.
Ransomware in orbit is coming. Governments will be creating clear cyber rules and norms for space ops. And I think the AI will become the front line in detecting and responding to threats.
Yeah, the AI was where I would go. Let computers protect computers.
Yeah, I feel like the future is going to look a lot like a William Gibson novel where we have AIs fighting AIs in the background and a bunch of different splinter nets across the globe.
That's a good analogy. I always think of Asimov.
Yeah.
I think change is going to remain constant. I think AI-based attacks are going to continue to increase. I think defenders are going to be slower to adopt AI defenses, although I think that those are en route and are coming online and more are every day. I think that we're going to see continued disruption and impact from changing geopolitical lines. And I think that the budgets are going to continue to be tight. Globally, there is a lot of money spent on cybersecurity. It doesn't always necessarily mean that an individual company or an individual agency or an individual organization has all of the dollars that they need to be safe. And so it does require skill and experience to be able to allocate those dollars effectively. But listen, I mean, Chris, this industry is not going away anytime soon. If anything, it's going to continue to rise in importance. And it's part of the reason why I think both myself and the team that we have at Plurilock are so motivated to help, is that this is an important mission. Helping organizations with these problems matters a lot. And I think it's a good field to be in.
So I'll usually go really far with my predictions on cybersecurity, but what I'm seeing, like how things are developing, one thing is for sure is that it will definitely change the way that we do our day-to-day job in cybersecurity. So, and I think we will become better and faster at detecting and responding to cyber threats. But as the second thing is, because we'll have a bit more time for other stuff, we'll be more proactive and maybe a bit more vigilant. Yes.
Might be a little counter to what some of the folks are saying. I think we're going to continue into this AI arms race, right? We've got this arms race, especially around the deepfake detection technologies. Right now, what we're seeing is there's a study out of, I'm going to butcher the name of the university, so I'm not going to say it in its full form, but SKKU out of South Korea in collaboration with the Australians. What they found was 0 out of the 16 deepfake detection technologies they tested at the top end of the market were able to reliably detect a deepfake in the wild. In the lab, perfectly fine, but in the wild, they weren't reliable. And I think that arms race is only going to continue. And so you're going to start to see a movement towards adopting more analog and or potentially even like Cold War era spy novel inspired techniques for things like identity verification, alongside then adoption of things like what we're doing for out-of-band identity verification with our partner, RickClear, so that you can actually start to vet identity appropriately through means that, you know, frankly, aren't really worried about whether or not the deepfake detection technologies can keep up with the ability to produce better and better deepfakes.
Gosh. You know, we said before this, you probably should send me these questions, right? Some preparations. Yeah. Look, I think we've talked about it a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the future of cybersecurity will be machine on machine. And I don't think I'm saying anything crazy or, you know, this isn't like an Einstein level analysis because we've talked about it all episode.
Yeah.
But in the end, if you're in cybersecurity, your job ultimately in the future is going to be directing the machines to the maximum advantage, just like you direct human teams right now.
Yeah.
So the sooner you can get on that, I think the better. I'm not touching on quantum. That's going to be a whole different minefield when it comes about. But I think the future of cybersecurity will be that machine on machine, you know, war, for lack of a better word, cyber warfare. And, you know, I think the opportunity there, again, you probably figured out I'm an optimist here. I think the opportunity is perhaps the technology revolution will tip the scales back in favor away from eminently funded nation states. Maybe. You know, like maybe technology will even the playing field a little bit where the human hour, right? The unlimited human hours that our adversaries may have and the unlimited dollar amounts that they have may just be a little bit less lopsided when you add in amazing technology that we can leverage that operates at machine speed. At least that's my hope, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty obvious one that AI is going to play a big factor. And then I think, it'll be interesting to see like those kind of impacts, but I feel like it is going to be really interesting to see what gets built out of it. When we see these companies building, you know, native AI integrations, I know Google, Splunk, and every, you know, big major player is, you know, be heavy on that. And, you know, for security analysts and engineers, it's kind of one of those important things to be, you know, right abreast with everything going on, but then also thinking how you can, you know, package those type of things or how you can do it better. Like in your own processes and make it more natural versus trying to adapt constantly. Because we see those companies chasing the next new shiny thing, but they don't really know how it operates or how it could integrate without clearing everything out that's working and starting anew. And you see people, MDR companies especially start falling to the wayside chasing, you know, AI as a replacement instead of AI as enrichment. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to see that can kind of continue where, you know, see analyst teams on the MDR side be, you know, very minimal staffing. So there's kind of that impact, but seeing how they can scale heavier and quicker with those AI integrations, those continuous improvements, and, you know, the new next generation will probably just be, you know, wearing so many different hats because it's going to be, you know, such a more wealth of knowledge, like right at your fingertips with AI, where you only have to dip your toe into certain areas to be almost an expert because you at least understand it. You can, you know, have AI doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the, you know, investigations and diagnoses. But, you know, that should make for some really interesting security analysts of the future where they're just, you know, experts in so many different areas and, you know, over, you know, far less amount of time to get to that space. Cause I know probably myself and you, you know, 10, 15, 20 years of bruises and battle scars. hopefully the new generation, you know, takes 2 to 5 years to get to that level, and hopefully don't have as much pain behind the eyes type situation as we do. But yeah, very optimistic for what that looks like. Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast, and I think probably one of the last ones of 2025. So if you're still here watching this with us, I just want to thank you so much for continuing to join us on the show week after week, giving me something to do. I love working in this industry and the kind of difference we get to make in the real world, and hope this show offers you some value. Looking forward to doing it again in 2026. Hope everybody has a great holiday and surrounded by friends and family as we go into the new year. And that brings us to the end of another great conversation. You can support our show by sharing your favorite episode with a friend, subscribe, give us a rating, or leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake, with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.